Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and I'm here with my co-host, Clint McPherson. What's up, man?
Not much, man. I'm just excited to record, like always. But really, I don't even want to waste any time because we've had a little bit of offline conversation with our guest. And I just want, we got to dig right into it, right? So let's go ahead and kick this thing off by welcoming our special guest to the show, Sydney Phillips. How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. We were talking a little bit off and we started going and they're like, hey, wait, hold on. We got to start this thing.
Exactly.
We got to get this in the episode. It was all very good stuff. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Sydney. It's an honor to have you on. Before we get into our questions, can you just tell us a quick, you know, who you are and kind of what you're all about generally?
Yeah. I am a real estate tech and social entrepreneur. I started out in commercial real estate by the age of 14, probably your most untraditional teenager in the world. And we had a family commercial real estate company. I took over that whenever my dad really suddenly passed away at 14. I had always said that I wanted to be CEO and I got my chance real early. So I grew that through all of high school and college, and I've gone on to commercial real estate investing, where we're building multifamily, hotel, office, retail, dug a little bit into the tech scene and got into some drone companies and robotics, and really interested in 5G and quantum mechanics and physics and, you know, all of the nerd things. And I just recently, in the past 6 months, developed Zucuri, which is a augmented reality and virtual reality platform for real estate developers so that you can communicate, market, and sell your unbuilt properties. I actually started it for myself because as a developer and, you know, the youngest in the room by 40 years, I was frustrated by the way that things were going and just kind of made it for myself and realized, hey, other people kind of like this too. And so I kind of accidentally started a tech company in the past year.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I mean, with what you just said, right? As a real estate, tech, and social entrepreneur, and you can tell that you have a passion and purpose for creating the future, right? By becoming congratulations on becoming the young female entrepreneur of the year as well. I mean, can you take us back though? Because you did mention and you touched on it, but really take us back to where your entrepreneurial journey started. And I know you kind of dug a little bit into, but we want to hear a little more behind that and what it is specifically about entrepreneurship that keeps you going every day.
Yeah. I mean, my path was very abrupt and it was very sudden. It was you're 14 years old and you go from worrying about the boy that likes you in the classroom to running a business. And that's really, you know, my path at 14, that's really when everything changed for me. I had always had, the teacher reports of, oh, she's bossy and she doesn't listen and she does her own thing. And, I always got the one of her head is in the clouds. She doesn't pay attention in class because she's thinking in her own head. And I'm 21 years old and that is still true. And so for me, I mean, I think my journey really started from the very, very beginning. I ignited when my dad passed away. That's really when I kind of found out what I was made of. And I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs, right? It's that grit story. It's that, you know, I was in the dark and I had to kind of find my light and nobody would light my tunnel. So I lit it myself.
That's a lot of stuff to figure out, especially at that age, you know, dealing with your father passing away. And that's just that on its own is incredibly difficult. And then on top of that, you're trying to figure out, hey, how do I continue his legacy? Right. So, and build a business. And it sounds like that was something that you were already interested in is being being a CEO, being in charge of a business. And so, it probably made a lot of sense at the time for you to kind of step up and fill that role.
Oh yeah. I mean, it wasn't even a question if I would. It was, this is what you do now. You got it a little early and You know, in a weird way, I'm super grateful that it happened. I think that I look at my other peers and people, you know, that are my age that come to me for advice and things like that whenever they are starting their businesses. I'm lucky to have this amazing community of women in STEM and girls who code and just complete fireballs. It's amazing to kind of cheer them on and say, hey, I've been here before. Let me show you the ropes, or meet people that are so sick of their day job and be like, hey, you need to read this book and this book. Call me when you have questions. And getting them investing in real estate. I think that the rules of success are in the books and they're laid out, and all you have to do is read it and do it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you started this company Zucuri. Am I pronouncing that right?
Zucuri, yes. So things Zucuri. Like zoo and then curry, like the spice.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So Zucuri. It's really interesting because it's software, right? That allows architects to visualize their designs, right, and be able to sell them. So what did you see that already existed in the market that was a similar solution maybe, but wasn't hitting the mark for you? And then how was that transition into tech for you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of augmented reality has blown up in the past 5 years. Let's start there. I mean, augmented reality is going to completely change the way that you walk into stores. It's going to completely change retail, health insurance, cars, even driving, right? I've seen a lot of car manufacturers like Cadillac put augmented reality speedometers on the windshield or directions on there so that you're not looking at your phone or the little screen. I mean, augmented reality is blown up. And being the tech nerd that I am of kind of growing up growing up to have an interest in that industry, I always watch that stuff. I'm very, very interested in it. Through the development though, I had seen that a lot of the augmented reality platforms were geared towards architects, engineers, or construction, which is great, but the entire panel looks like you're about to fly a plane. I mean, there are so many gadgets and switches. You have to go to engineering school to figure out how to use their software. And I was, you know, I'm 21. I'm a business major, just graduating. And I was like, I don't know how to read this, but I'm going to build a hotel here, but I don't know how to even read your stupid plan. This is dumb. So I started Zucuri basically as a way to visualize your properties before they're built and implement this whole augmented reality boom into an industry that's as old as time, real estate, and really needs to be sped up to the 21st century. And started Zucuri because I wanted it for myself. And in the beginning, it was truly just to help my own development. And then I kind of realized, hey, other people kind of like this too. And I would like to be a tech founder.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it kind of set, it's totally different from real estate, right? It, having a tech business and there's definitely advantages. Something you could scale a little bit easier, I'm sure. So what was that transition then? Like, you know, from real estate, you're like, okay, I've got this problem. I'm going to solve it for myself, but then, oh wait, I can do this for other people. Or other people would be interested in this. Did you develop it? Did you work with other people to help you develop it? How did that work?
Yeah, the process of switching from real estate to tech is one that I am still figuring out. I don't know if I'll ever have it figured out, to be honest with you. Kind of as I've gotten into it, I've realized there are some things that I approach in a different way that will really help me in the long term. And there are other things that I am just oblivious that I don't even know that I don't know. And admitting that is kind of the first step of getting the right advisors and the right people on your team. The first 2 months that I had the idea, I spent probably 13 hours a day on LinkedIn, finding people with a technical background and messaging probably 100 to 150 people, No one wanted to work with me.
Really?
No one.
Was it, is it the challenge, the technical challenge of it, or really?
Finding people that can code in augmented reality and also create virtual reality, the skills behind, the technical skills are not there in the marketplace. So all of the people that have those skills work for the big guys like Google and Apple and Facebook. And majority of the time, the people that work there, they're working for somebody else because they seek stability and security. And I can't offer them that. This is a wild roller coaster. Buckle up. There's no security, baby. But there's also, you know, extremely high highs and extremely low lows. And finding the right people that are okay with that is challenging, that also have a technical background, that get around with a bubbly real estate personality like this girl, that can also geek out. I mean, you got a lot of intersections to cross.
Yeah, and the pace is a lot different, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure the pace is pretty fast at a place like Google, let's say. But I mean, in some ways, I'm sure it's actually not even as, it can be blistering with entrepreneurship, because you are like every second you're consumed with solving this exact problem. And in a large company, there's a bunch of different problems. There's big teams, and there's, you know, there's like, you can focus on a smaller, each person can focus on a smaller part of the problem. And so it's like, it's not that insane, but when you're wearing so many hats, and if you're like one developer trying to figure this whole thing out, it's full on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, in a bigger sense as well, whenever you're at a larger company, what you do doesn't play a massive role in the progression of the company, right? I mean, I would love to sit there and say, oh, every single software engineer at Apple is creating the most cutting edge technology and changing the world. They're not. They're going home, they're receiving a paycheck, they're doing what they need to do, and they're leaving. Some people don't want to do that, and that's fine. Those people just shouldn't work with me.
Right. Well, yeah. You got to find the right puzzle piece too, right? I mean, you're looking for a team. You're looking to surround yourself with people that buy into your vision. Because if you don't, they think it's cool. They love what you're saying, but they're not really buying in. And if you can't get that buy-in right there, that's the team member you don't want to have. Because like you said, there's going to be extremely high highs in something like this and low lows. So you have to have that buy-in. So they're on that roller coaster with you, because you don't want them to be on in this van or this car going 5 miles an hour down the road, and they could just bail at any time. Because at the end of the day, if you're on a roller coaster, you're at the top or it's going full blast, you can't just jump out when you want to, right? So you got to find that team that has that buy-in, so they're strapped in with you until that ride stops, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the first 2 months, I truly spent messaging all of the people that I thought would be great co-founders, all of these great people. Then I realized no one wants to work with me. I should outsource this. Looked into some Ukrainian companies and abroad and Indian developers and thought, what are you doing, Sid? You know better than this. This is not the route I want to go. I want to partner. I finally stumbled upon at Dallas Startup Week, one of my lead software engineer. He's amazing. And he brought on one of his friends who was a machine learning programmer as well. So now we have three of us. Product MVP is built. We're basically soft launching in January. And we're going to go from entire idea, rough idea concept to revenue within a year, when most people in augmented reality take about 2 years to even have seed money to be able to start.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a smart way to do it, is because a lot of tech companies the first thing they do is they think, all right, I've got to raise capital. And like everything they do, they have to raise capital for. And at some point you actually have to, you know, sell the product to generate revenue, right? Like raise $100 million in capital. You just figure you're $100 million in the hole. You don't have that, you know, that's not walking around money, right? So I think it's smart to, as much as you can, to bootstrap And I mean, that's smart also to find a partner. I mean, you're going to give up equity that way, right? You're not, but it's probably a lot less cash out of pocket, or maybe no cash out of pocket right up front. If for people who are listening, who want to take that route and find a partner, to develop their app or whatever, you know, SaaS product or whatever, how would you advise them to find somebody to partner with?
Go to events that are in the industry that you want to work in. If you want to work in digital marketing, find groups on Facebook and LinkedIn and write a blog post that directs them to your personal website. I have, you know, thesydneyphillips.com, and I post all my stuff there and whatever else. And I would join these groups, and then I would post, you know, different blog posts that are actually valuable. Don't agenda post yourself. And give actual valuable insight into the industry or real estate or AR, VR, or things that you think are going to happen. For me, that was always, you know, kind of this role. And I don't know if I like this word, but futurist. And so I would project and say, this is what I think is going to happen. And then I would wait. And when it happened, I was like, see, I told you. And when it didn't happen, I just said, well, I was wrong. So yeah, join groups around you, and especially in your area as well. I think that's important. Every single city has something to do with, you know, Global Entrepreneurship Week or entrepreneur meetups or things like that. Reach out to people in those. Another avenue that I would have taken if I didn't find my team was I found a bunch of, you can go to colleges and they have, you know, different programs or different groups or whatever else. So let's say, for instance, that you want to do, let's say that you want to sell a beverage and it's an actual product and you don't have enough money to pay sales people, or you don't want to onboard people, or you can't find the right people, whatever. Look around you at the colleges and go find a sales program or a sales class and go reach out to those professors or those administrators. Tell them that for each student, they will receive 2% of all of the profits for the next 6 months, and that's their internship. And you don't get paid on, you know, an hourly thing, whatever else. This is pure hustle. If you sell, you know, 100,000, you receive 2% or 1% or whatever of the profits. That was the other route that I was considering taking. And if I wouldn't have found my team members, that's what I would have done.
Yeah, I like how you bring that up, because a lot of individuals that are in the podcasting space like us, they'll leverage in individuals that need experience, right? Mm-hmm. For an internship, but that, you know, in broadcasting or whatever it is that would relate directly to what you're doing. So that could be business too, right? So yeah. All these programs that have business courses or whatever, and these individuals need experience, they need internships. You can do it for pennies on the dollar, or you can do it where it's like you said, a percentage, or it's just a credit for their course to get them their hours quicker, so they don't have to go and do some random internship they're not interested in. And going to leverage those programs, that is fabulous advice. And yeah. I'm 100% behind you on that one.
Yeah. And they also buy into it more, right? I think reading from a textbook and then taking a test, I can name zero times ever that I've ever had to take a test to prove my knowledge or my skills. And there's a reason why most entrepreneurs aren't good at school. It's because you don't follow the rules.
Right.
Rules are meant for, you know, structure and systems. And as entrepreneurs, your whole goal is to ruin the system. So I think, you know, incorporating at least even a hands-on experience is not only great for the students involved and also the professors and the program and the credibility of the institution or the organizations. I mean, you also get great advice and fresh eyes that haven't been in the industry for such a long time that can say, that's dumb. That's a dumb process. Why do you do it that way?
Right. Mm-hmm. Nah, yeah. I love that perspective. And I mean, with this, Sydney, I mean, there's different motivations behind entrepreneurship, and we all know that, right? Yep. But what is your personal perspective on balance in entrepreneurship, and why balance itself could be one of the biggest lies when it comes to entrepreneurship culture?
I think things are only ever balanced for a moment in time. So let's say that you have, you know, work and personal life, and you're really trying to do 50 hours a week on this one and 50 hours and balance it. You're only ever going to be balanced when one of them is going down and one of them is going up for a split moment in time. So this obsession with balance is just stupid. I don't understand it at all. I think that there's certain times where, you know, there's certain weeks where I'm going to work 90 hours a week. I'm not going to have any clean clothes. I'm going to be eating in and out every single day or takeout. And I'm not going to talk to my family. That's fine. That's totally fine. There's other weeks, you know, in the holidays where I don't want to be on customer calls, partly because everybody else is kind of with their family. So this is my time to also be with my family. Yeah, I mean, it has to be flexible. And that's this. And it goes both ways, right? There's like this hustle culture of like, you need to work 90 hours a week every single week or you won't be successful. Well, there's a reason why I have many, many businesses. And that's because I love to work. I hate to work on the same thing. So working on, you know, different businesses is what avoids my burnout. But for other people that might be like, you know, working out every day or going to go catch drinks with friends or, you know, relationships or whatever else. So I think knowing yourself is the most important part behind that and knowing what your balance looks like, because everybody's balance doesn't look the same. I'm sure there are a lot of people that would look at my balance and say, that looks awful. But I would also look at a lot of other people's balance and be like, that looks terrible.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that. I think balance is, I mean, it's very, very hard to achieve. And I think what you said about it being, everything is can be balanced in a moment and that's it. It makes sense because you really do, there are times when everything does feel perfectly in harmony and balanced. So I've got all this, you know, work done and I mean, I'm good there and, you know, I can really focus more on personal life. But then it, you know, things tip out and it's not necessarily like you said, I don't think it's bad to have things a little bit out of whack. Like nothing's perfect all the time. So it's kind of a state that you're, you know, balance. Maybe it's a state that you're always sort of chasing, but as long as you're not obsessed with it, and as long as you understand that it is fleeting and momentary, then
for sure,
you're probably all right.
I mean, I envision the seesaw method, right? Where it's like, you know, okay, when you're in chemistry class or whatever it is, and you're trying to balance something out to where it's like, okay, I got a scale now. Oh, it's perfect. That's what we need. You're never going to have it that way, right? Because again, like you said, your amount of hours that you need to work to be successful might be different than the amount of hours you need to spend with your significant other or your spouse or whatever that person is, or your kid, to where it's like they need time for sure. Or you need that time with friends or whatever it is for sure. But it's like, again, it's for that moment in time. And then now it needs to go back here because that's where you're better in your headspace and you're playing to your advantages and you're playing to your strengths there too. So it's like, you know, that seesaw, if you get the same person, you get me on both sides and I'm just sitting here like, okay, dude, what's happening, bro? Like we went both way the same. Who's going to push off first? I'm waiting, right? Well, dude, we weigh the same. You know, we're never going to go back and forth unless we push. So it's like, it's that give and take. So you got to get on that. It's that seesaw thing to where, hey, you'll level out from time to time. Oh, there we go. We're back here, right? So, I mean, I love the way you express that. And I really think the balance is good to talk about and saying, oh, you do have to find that balance. That balance that works for you, not the balance that keeps you balanced the whole entire time, right?
Mm-hmm. Success can look however you want to look like. I mean, if it's a side hustle and all you do is have fun and travel the world, and I mean, I have a couple of friends that's what they do. They have an online business. They look at it for 30 minutes a day, and they can travel the world, and they have the best time of their lives. Would I be able to do that? Oh God, no! Oh my gosh, no! I would not be able to sit down for an hour. That would be fun for like a week and I'd be over it. I probably started another business in that week, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everybody works differently, but I respect them. And I mean, they're grinding and they're making so many memories and they're truly living their successful life. So am I. Looks different.
Right. Exactly. And as long as you figure out what that is for you and you're doing that, then that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. So
and if you don't know what it looks like for you, I would recommend, if you're a female entrepreneur, I would recommend reading Figure It Out by Marie Forleo, or no, Everything is Figure Outable by Marie Forleo, or read some business books. Go in and go, you know, there's no shame in reading some self-help business books. I think figuring out what you want is really the first goal, and you should do that way before you even start something.
Definitely. Yeah. And knowing what a business will entail nobody's ever going to have a perfect idea or understanding of what the business is going to look like after they get started. Right. I mean, that's really hard to predict, but if you can at least get an idea, start with a plan and understand, you know, what am I really getting myself into? Because I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs who they want to launch a product and they really don't know what that means. You know, they have no idea. Maybe they read the 4-hour work week and they think that's what it looks like. Maybe they think that they have to grind 90 hours a week and that's what it has to look like. But it's something in between, you know, it's misleading on both ends of the spectrum. And so understanding kind of roughly what you're going to have to do on a daily basis to launch your business and to make it sustainable for you that's important, because a lot of people just don't know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah. And ask yourself, how am I going to have fun every day? Yeah. Like, what part of my day is like the best part? And if it's going home, don't do it. If going home or leaving the office is the best part of the day, you're already in ground zero.
Right.
Yeah.
The thank God it's Fridays. I hate that, man. I'm like, I grew up like that, and everybody around me, thank God it's Friday. We're gonna go chill on the weekend. But I'm like, come on, man. Like, if you're not doing what you love every day, get out quick.
I've talked about this so many times with my friends. As far as, you know, if you're more excited about Friday night than Monday morning, then you are wasting your life. Exactly. And it is an absolute miracle that we're even here. It's an absolute miracle that you were even born in this era and time, and not to get all philosophical, but I mean, the chances that you're even alive, Gary Vee, I'm a huge Gary Vee fanatic. And he says all the time, your odds of being alive are 1 in 400 trillion. 400 trillion. Are you kidding me? And you're excited about 2.5 days. And most of it, you just go grocery shopping and laundry. Are you kidding me? That's what you're living for?
Yeah.
Wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so funny. I definitely enjoy relaxing and sort of like tipping the scales back to, you know, to just kind of enjoying and soaking it in. But after a couple of days or after one solid day of that, usually I'm like, all right, I got to do a little something, even if it's 2 or 3 hours worth of work, you know. I mean, I feel better on Monday. You know, I feel a little productive over the weekend. And yeah, it's just that helps. That definitely helps with the balance, you know, because yeah, and it works for me exactly. So with, you know, you're obviously super busy, but you love it that way, and that's awesome. But how do you manage your schedule with everything that you do? And what does a typical day in the life of Sydney look like?
There is no typical day.
I thought you might say that.
There's absolutely. Every day, I have no idea what's happening. I normally use time blocking. I found that was really helpful. I will mention this. There's a book called The 12-Week Year, and it's basically how to get more stuff done in 12 weeks than most people get done in a year. And that book changed my productivity. I time block, and when you give yourself, you know, an hour to finish all of your referral program, it's amazing what you get done when you know that you don't have time to screw around on Instagram or answer messages or whatever else. I think another thing that I do is I turn off my phone. When I walk into the office at 7 o'clock, my phone is off and it only turns on past, I try to keep all my calls past 1 p.m. because I work best in the morning and that's really when my mind is the clearest. And then I kind of need an energy revamp in the afternoon. So I book things, you know, with calls and whatever else. So I turn off my phone for sure. I think time blocking has been really valuable. Reading that book, 12-week year has been really valuable. Overall, I think, you know, no day looks even remotely similar for me. Every single month is like a different season or a different project or different things that you're working on. And I think that's the most exciting part of all of it is because, I mean, I'm hands deep with the engineers one day, and then I'm on the design side one day, and then I'm doing financials one day. I mean, truly, you have to be a Jane or a Jack of all trades to run a company. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I agree that I think having every day look a little bit different is nice. You know, I mean, it kind of reminds me of college actually, where and when I was in college, I knew this was pretty cool that I had all these different classes and I was learning about all these different things, you know, and it wasn't all the same all the time. Every day was a little bit different. And I knew that I was afraid I was going to miss that when I got out into the working world. And I definitely did miss it with my full-time job right out of college. I'm like, man, so I just do this one thing all the time, every day. This is not cool. You know, like, but yeah, even if you just have one business and it's a small business, you're still every day is going to be interesting and different. And if you have multiple businesses, just even more so. So I think that I definitely think that, I mean, it can make it overwhelming some days, but it also makes it interesting.
Yeah. And you have to welcome that stress. I think so many people are like, oh, I follow the path of joy and I only want to do things that bring me peace and, you know, zen or whatever. Build up your stress tolerance. I think I'm speaking from experience. My stress tolerance from my teenage years of what I could handle in the businesses is pretty low. Between going to school full time and running that, I was overwhelmed to say the least. I'm now graduating college a semester early because I loaded up on courses and running 4 businesses. And I truly two months ago decided I should write a book. And to have been writing a book, I mean, your stress tolerance increases and then you're able to hold more capacity. And it's amazing what you would be able to do in a day or what you can get accomplished even in a year. If you constantly just add a little bit more on your plate and feel that stress, feel overwhelmed, be okay with it, take an immunity shot and figure it out.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think that kind of ties into this next question here, because we all go through our highs and lows through our entrepreneurial journey, right?
Yep.
What has been the most difficult thing for you about being an entrepreneur, and how did you get unstuck and not lose traction through that time?
I think running a company, you have so many different facets of it, right? You've got financials and you have to worry about cash and runway. And then you have to worry about your team and communicating right, making sure that you're the right leader. And then you have to go sell. I mean, you're everything. I think to kind of back up, my biggest mistake is probably my own ego. It's easy to get cocky, especially whenever your business is doing well. It's easy to be like, man, I'm running this. I am killing it. Yeah. And it gets to your head. And that is probably the most dangerous thing about entrepreneurship. It's this battle, right? I mean, people talk about it all the time. It's kind of like the fight club of entrepreneurship. It's like, nobody talks about the mental breakdown, but then nobody talks about the ego bust too. So kind of on those extreme highs and lows, I mean, there are times where you're like, I can't do this. I'm not fit for this. Like, I suck. I don't think I can run this company. There's also times where you're like, I am the only person in the world that can do this, you know? So I think balancing those, for the lack of a better word, I hate the word balance, but balancing those, I think is key. I think getting unstuck, whenever you are stuck, do the things that don't relate to that. So I was very stuck on, you know, the team and the product. And so I thought, all right, fine. Nope. So I can't get through to that. That's fine. I'll just go the other route and I'll start talking to customers. So before I brought on everyone, I talked to 150 customers in those 2 months that I was trying to bait people and just get someone to join our team. And so, yeah, so if one road closes, don't stop and don't become fixated and obsessed with it and like, oh, it's not working. And that's where people lose their traction, because they're waiting on this thing to fall in place. And sometimes you just need to give it time for it to fall into place.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you've got to figure out a workaround. There's no real excuse for it, for something to not like, okay, I've done everything I can do and this is as far as I can take it. There's always some kind of workaround. Well, usually, definitely got into situations with online sales, working with platforms like Wayfair to be, you know, to just throw them completely under the bus, and even Amazon. But Wayfair has done this where they've messed with our pricing, and they have these algorithms that set pricing automatically. And we're like, hey, send them an email. Hey, can you just drop the algorithm? Just set our pricing to our, you know, to our set pricing. And you think that'd be super easy. And then it, then like 50 emails later and they still haven't done it. And you're literally like, well, I don't have, the only way I could fix this is having access to their platform. So, I mean, we just didn't ship orders until they finally fixed it. But it's like, usually there's almost always something you can do. Sometimes you do run into a situation where it's like, all right, I actually can't do anything right here.
Yeah. Andrew, welcome to corporate.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
They do not move fast, do they?
Not at all. Yeah. Dealing on the back end with large companies, that's probably one of the most difficult things about being a small business. It's like you're trying to be agile and nimble and quick, and you are, except that when you have to deal with bigger companies, which sometimes you kind of do, or at least it makes things easier, it can be really difficult to work with those businesses, because, oh man, I reached out to on LinkedIn, I reached out to like 50 different people from Wayfair who were, you know, who I thought could help me. And I just started messaging them, because I'm like, yeah, somebody's got to help me out here.
Yeah.
Like, so, mm-hmm. So there's usually, and like that got some action, but sometimes it just takes some real, you got to think outside of the box. And, but you're right. You've just got to work through it, whatever it is, and figure out a solution, and you can't get stuck.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you're on the right path and you know what you're supposed to be doing. And that's the most frustrating, because you're like, I know I'm supposed to be doing this. I can't get through this roadblock. And sometimes the best thing to do is to leave it for a week, go focus on customer development, and come right back. And sometimes everything falls into place.
Exactly. Yeah. Or maybe it's for some reason that your problem a week ago is just moot now. You know, you've done something else that now... You're like, that's not even a problem anymore for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. It's like the fire took itself out. Mm-hmm. The trash took itself out. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love it.
So Sydney, as we wrap up this episode, if there's one piece of advice, you know, you could offer our audience, what would that be?
Oh boy. I think I've got two. I think my first piece of advice is that it's incredibly important to be in touch with both your masculine and your feminine energy in business. I mean, I of course came up in real estate. The majority of it is men, and most of them are 40 to 50 years older than I am. I struggled with this a lot in the beginning. as I'm a pink suit wearing blonde girl that loves, you know, sparkle and glitters or whatever else. But I also love to play in the dirt and get down to business and talk numbers. And I'm a straight shooter. And so I really struggled with managing both of those sides and what to project. I think in the beginning, I was very uncomfortable with, you know, how girly I was and felt like I had to show up in a black suit or a blue suit, or you have to be this kind of professional or whatever else. The truth is people love it when you are different and when you're not really afraid of being different. So I think now I walk into the meetings and I'm in a bright orange suit and everyone knows that that's how I'm going to show up and they don't care. I think you have to be incredibly in touch with both of those sides of your energy, and everyone has it. It's not just women. Men have it too. I mean, sometimes you need to appeal to more of a relator side and you need to talk about their families. There are certain types of people. I mean, there's four different types, right? The thinker, the director, the relator, I'm forgetting the last one. Oh, and the socializer. Sometimes you need to make that small talk. And sometimes, you know, the men don't really like it, but you need to do it to engage and learn more about them and gain that trust. So I think that's kind of my first piece of advice. My second is, if you are ever the smartest person in the room, you need to find a new room. I hate being the smartest person in the room. I hope that I build a team of engineers, and I know that I have so far. My engineers are much smarter than me, and they've been able to, you know, kind of direct our company and to be able to help me. I think if you're hiring people that are at the same level of you as you or below, I mean, you're not going to get very far, because the best that you can go is only your capability. So yeah, if you're the smartest person in the room, find a new room, because you get into some really cool stuff. I can tell you what, I never thought that at 18 I'd be doing drones and augmented reality and AI and 5G and quantum. I never thought that was me, okay. But I got into the right rooms.
That's very cool. And you put yourself out there, which is the first step, mm-hmm. right? Is to just kind of get out there and learn some things and talk to people and figure out, hey, what are the opportunities in different market segments, and just kind of go for it. And what you, the first thing you discover, the first thing you think you might start a business around, you might not end up starting a business around that, you know, but at least it might lead you, hopefully it leads you eventually to what, you know, to what you can really cash in on.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I just think it's incredibly important to be surrounded by people that aren't necessarily even in your industry too. Like if you're in digital marketing, you should surround yourself with computer scientists and, you know, people in biotech and whatever else, because a lot of times I think that the greatest innovations come from a mixture of things. And that's kind of what I found with Zucuri, right? I mean, I was in real estate and I found that augmented reality and AI mixed together with real estate was revolutionary. To the people in augmented reality, they don't think what I'm doing is revolutionary at all. But to the people in real estate, they think this is amazing. This is like next generation future technology. And to them, you have to be able to patchwork ideas and processes and whatever else. And that's really when you stumble upon greatness.
Oh, I love all of that. Really cool. And just like you said, guys, listen to what Sydney just said, find the right room. But I think that's a wrap for this episode. And from the both of us, Sydney, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us and adding value on what we're doing on our podcast.
Of course. It was nice to catch up with y'all.
Yeah, you too, Sydney. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Sydney is working on, check out Zucuri.com or The Pink Suit Podcast on iTunes. If you like what you heard today, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or any other major podcast directory. You can also find us on all the socials and on thatentrepreneurlife.com.
And with that said, we also want to quickly give a special shout out to our family, friends, to include all of our listeners, followers, and subscribers. Thanks for continuing to support what we do, guys, as entrepreneurs. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.